It's now time for our second panel member. I'd like to introduce Chris H. from Coolum Beach, Australia, to speak for 15 minutes. All right, his reading from the big book is from page XXVI, and it says, in the doctor's opinion, in this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. And again, I'd like to now welcome Chris H. from Coolum Beach, Australia, to share for the next 15 minutes.
Hey, g'day everyone. My name's Chris Hertz and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the men's group in Moolabar, which is in Queensland, Australia. So welcome from down under. I'll try and speak slowly because apparently we don't speak English down here. So I've been told. I've a sobriety date the 20th of the 12th, 1990, and for that I'm truly grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, the power greater than me, that I've been sober this long. I feel like a flyweight on the undercard to a heavyweight title fight with all the best fighters to come, and then you've got me. So it's all uphill from here. It's truly an honour, and I want to thank the committee for certainly asking me to speak on this panel. Step one, you know, it seems to be, and I've heard that a few people say for a long time around the show, that the longest journey begins with the first step, and it's usually the hardest and the most difficult. And certainly for me, that was the case. You know, Father Martin talked about the house, the grass is the obvious. And it seems to me that, you know, my alcoholism was obvious to everyone around me bar me. You know, I kind of suspected that alcohol was the problem in my life, but it was more obvious to everyone else around me. And, you know, I should have seen the warning signs. You know, I remember one of the first big drinks I had in the readings about this physical factor, you know, and I didn't understand that until I was about 3 years sober. And you may think, geez, that's a bit slow. Why didn't you pick that up earlier? But I didn't. I couldn't understand what it was that differentiates me from the so-called normal drinker. And, you know, the first big drink that I ever really did have, I was at a football club party one night, and I think I was 16 years of age, and I remember going there, and I couldn't buy alcohol because I was too young, so I got some older girls to buy alcohol for me, and they bought 12 cans of beer, I think it was at the time, and I don't remember a great deal about that night, but I certainly remember drinking those cans of beer very, very quickly and doing stupid things and blacking out and waking up in the change rooms of the toilets or the bathroom, and I vomited profusely, they reckon, for about 2.5 hours. And I was lucky I didn't die then, because I was lucky I didn't, you know, drown in my own vomit. And I remember the long ride home thinking to myself, I ain't never, ever doing that again. I felt so sick and sorry for myself, and I'd love a dollar for every time I said that over the next 10 years, I'm never going to do that again. And that you know, sums up pretty much my drinking career, you know, early days. And that's really what happened pretty much every time I drank. I always drank to excess. I never really had one or two. It was always, once I started, I didn't seem to have an off button, as I've heard over the years. You know, I had that thing called the phenomenon of craving, although I didn't know it was a phenomenon of craving at the time. It just seemed to me that it tasted really good and I wanted more, and no one drank as quickly as I did, and I couldn't work that out. And, you know, I desperately wanted to be able to drink because it seemed to bring out the best part of me. It brought out the person in me that I always thought that I should be. You know, it made me bigger, tougher, made me be able to dance with the girls, it may be able to talk to the girls, it may be able to play pool. It seems to gave me all these things that I couldn't do on my own power. And so, you know, all I had to do was, try and grasp not to drink so much that I didn't get into blackout and vomit, but I failed every time, you know, and that was a baffling thing for me, why it was that I, you know, was always there. You know, I had friends that would come to the bars and they would have four or five drinks and go home, you know, and I'd go there and they'd be leaving to go home and I'd be there till closing and looking for the next party and the next party and the next party. And I couldn't understand this. And, you know, I drank for 10 years from the ages of 16 to 26 and I couldn't work out why it was that I went downhill so quickly. And I drank with a lot of older guys and people who've been drinking for a long, long time. And I couldn't work out why I was getting in so much trouble with it, why it was that I had, sort of had no control over it, and why it was that I finished up in places that I didn't want to finish up in. And, you know, it was a constant battle daily to wake up thinking, I've done it again. And that became part of my drinking life very, very early. You know, I picked up a wife and kids along the way and put them through torture, you know, and I didn't see it. I could not see it. As I said, you know, the truly, you know, it's hard to grasp the obvious, and I didn't see the obvious, you know. And, you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 26 on the 20th of December 1990, and I remember walking in the rooms and thinking, boy, it's all over now, you know. I couldn't work out how I'd gotten to AA. It just seemed beyond conceivable that I would be in Alcoholics Anonymous at this such a young age. And you know, the doctors had said to me a year before, you know, if you keep drinking the way you're going, you're not going to make 30. And you know, I used to look at that and go, well, I got 4 years or 5 years to go. I'll do something about it then. But you know, I arrived at the doors, you know, 26, and because I couldn't stand being drunk anymore, and I couldn't stand being sober, and I didn't know what to do. It turns out that's a really good place to be. I didn't see it at the time. So, you know, I suffered from the delusion or illusion that the drinking was the solution to my problems, and I couldn't see a life without it, and I couldn't see a life with it. And it turns out that's a really good place to be. You know, I was at a surrendered state that I'd gotten to my first meeting, and I remember sitting there and listening to the stories, and I kind of got a bit out of a few of the stories that I heard, but the one thing I got, they were talking about this day at a time thing, and I'm thinking, that's all crap, they mean forever, and I can't grasp forever because I can't perceive a life without alcohol. And so I left that meeting, you know. I don't know whether I got a great deal of hope from that meeting, but I certainly was thinking about a lot of stuff on the way home about, you know, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do now? Because, you know, I couldn't stop drinking, and my experience proved that along the way, you know, that every time I tried to stop, I'd give it away for a couple of days, but for some stupid reason, I'd always pick it back up again. And it didn't matter whether it was, you know, a sunny day, a rainy day, fighting with the wife, not fighting with the wife, arguing with the guys at work, not arguing with the guys at work, having a good day, having a bad day, you know, for some reason or other, my mind would give me permission to drink when I didn't really want to drink. And once I started, I couldn't seem to stop. And you know, I didn't fully understand the seriousness of that for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I said I was in AA for 3 years before I understood that, you know, because I guess, you know, for the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, you go back 30 years ago, you know, the steps and weren't really spoken about a lot, especially down in Australia, you know. And so, or maybe they were spoken about, but I didn't hear it, you know. Because I looked at those principles upon the wall and they seemed a far cry from the way that I'd lived life. And so I did, about the only thing I did right early days was do lots of meetings. And you know, I'd get asked to speak and I'd stand up and say, my name's Chris and I'm an alcoholic, but not fully understanding the magnitude of what that meant. You know, I said it because everybody else said it. And I desperately wanted to fit in with you guys because I didn't fit in out there and I didn't seem to fit in anywhere. And so, you know, I used to say I was an alcoholic because everybody else did. And, And, you know, I had 3 years of sobriety. I had what my sponsor calls the second surrender. And, you know, to some extent, that second surrender in Alcoholics Anonymous can be more powerful than the first one. You know, I was 3 years sober. I'd put the drink down. I was white knuckling. I was angry. I was suicidal. I was all these things. But it wasn't supposed to be like that because I'd stopped drinking. And, you know, I couldn't understand that, and it turns out, you know, that's a really good place to be too, because I have no options. I want to drink or I'm going to blow my brains out, and blowing my brains out seemed like a really good idea, and that's a scary place to be. You know, I'm not going to drink, but I'm going to blow my brains out. And through a set of circumstances, you know, a guy saw that I was in a bit of trouble, and that's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, this guy saw I was in trouble and come and pick me up. And drag me off to a big book study meeting. And, you know, back in those days, that was the meeting that everyone told you not to go to, or don't be going to that, those kind of meetings, you know. But I was sick and tired of feeling the way that I was feeling. And I got to that big book study meeting, and they were going through the doctor's opinion. And that reading that was read out was, they, you know, talked about this, that we seemed to have an allergy to alcohol. And it was like someone had turned the lights on. It was like someone had walked into my darkness and turned the light on. And all of a sudden I got it. I sat bolt upright in the chair and I finally understood what it was, what they were talking about, this thing that differentiates me from the so-called normal drinker. But, you know, it's the only thing really that I have in common with everyone in this room today. If they identify as an alcoholic, you know, we'll do crazy stuff when we drink, but ultimately the one thing we all have in common is that we can't start drinking without developing that phenomenon of craving. So I sat bolt upright because finally I understood why it was that, you know, every time I said I was only going to go and have a few drinks that I wouldn't make an argument. To that point, I just thought I was a weak-willed guy that couldn't handle it, you know, and I've been strong-willed in every other area of my life. You know, people used to say, "I bet you can't do that, Chris," and I'd be able to do it, but with this, I couldn't do it. And for me, it was suddenly, in, you know, all these years in Alcoholics Anonymous, it was finally explained to me why it was that I acted and behaved the way that I did when I drank, and it was, I just went, wow, you know, and it started me on a journey, you know, to get into those steps. Then, you know, it seems to be, you know, the depth and seriousness that I work the program depends upon the depth and seriousness that I accept step one, and it just seems to be that way, you know. And the more that I accept step one, and the deeper I have that experience, is that it pushes me through the rest of the steps. And it was certainly with me 3 years sober, I had nothing left, you know, I had absolutely nothing left, and I understood it on that day. I understood the seriousness and the nature of what being powerless over alcohol meant, but I come that close to picking up a drink, you know, and again, it explained, you know, and I had experience after experience of that phenomenon of craving, but it says when, you know, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear, and I heard it at that particular point in time, you know, I remember I was out I went to my wife's best friend's wedding, you know, and I can't tell you when I started drinking, because I always had the drink before you went to the party, the drink at the party, and the drink after the party, because of that phenomenon of craving. And we spent all day at this wedding, and we're out that night, and I was pretty drunk, and we were in a bar and got into a fight, and me and this other guy and a guy who were fighting with, you know, smashed a glass on the side of my face and cut me from, you know, to bottom of my jaw, you know, and I remember waking up on the way to hospital and lying in the hospital bed, and the doctors are saying, you know, how much have you had to drink today? And me giving him this blank look, you know, because I couldn't say a couple, because that was my answer anyway. But the seriousness nature of it was they needed to know how much I had to drink, because they were going to give me an anaesthetic to try and, you know, sew me face up, and I couldn't tell him. And they're asking my wife, and she couldn't tell him either, because I couldn't tell you any given day how much I've had to drink, because once I start, I can't seem to stop. And so they had to just give me a light sedation and put a few stitches in, and they couldn't operate on me till the next day. And I remember waking up the next day, you know, sick and sorry for myself, and my mouth stuck together from that that coming down off, being hung over and shaking and shivering. And all I wanted was to have a drink of water because my mouth was that dry. And the doctor saying, we can't give you that because we're going to operate on you in a few hours. And my father standing at the foot of the bed and looking at me with that look in his eye and that disdain look saying, haven't you had enough yet? When are you going to realise? And sitting back feeling low as low, thinking, I've had enough, I can't keep doing this, And that went on and on and on and on and on. So I understood that day what powerlessness over alcohol was, and it seems to be that, that I'm powerless over it when I'm drinking it because of that phenomenon of craving, and I'm powerless over it when I'm not drinking. Because my life gets very unmanageable when I'm not drinking. I don't know how to do life. I don't know how to fit out there in the big wide world because, I'd been drunk for the last 5 years of my drinking, and that's the way I dealt with and coped with life. And certainly I could not understand, how to live life without alcohol. I'd white knuckled it for 3 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and so, I was in a perfect position, and I'd surrendered to the fact that, if I don't do anything about these steps, I'm going to drink again, and to drink with me, I was going to die. And so, I was later on to come to understand that that's what they call a first step experience, and, as I said, people have it a lot quicker than that. I certainly had it at 3 years, and certainly compelled me into doing the rest of the steps and attacking those steps with a vigor that I'd never thought that I would, I try and share my experiences when I'm trying to help, new guys about, it says in the book that, someone properly armed with the facts about themselves can generally win the entire confidence of another human being. And I guess that's what happened to me through this guy, and by him sharing his experience on what powerless meant to him, I was able to get touch within my heart for me to have that experience. And step one off is no hope. It just shows me how hopeless I am, and the hope comes from step two. So I was glad I was in that position. In all the years I've been around, what seems to be the worst things that have happened to me in sobriety turned out to be the best things that happened in sobriety. And that was the worst thing that I could see was happening in sobriety. I was suicidal 3 years, but it turned out to be the best thing, and it turned out to be the launching pad for me to move on with the rest of the steps. So I'd like to thank you for allowing me to share, and thanks very much, guys. I'll finish on that.
Thank you so much, Chris. That was a touching story. Thank you. Yeah.